Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Rock Bay Market and their new locally sourced smoked Pacific octopus taco kits. If that makes your mouth water, head to rockbaymarket.ca to find out more. Introducing the Capital Daily's Weekly Photo Challenge. Each week, our team will post a weekly photo theme in Monday's Capital Daily newsletter, as well as announcing it right here on the podcast, with winners receiving gift cards to local Victoria businesses around town. This week's theme, what are you thankful for? To enter, simply email us your photo or post it directly to your own social media account. For more details, check out Monday's Capital Daily newsletter. Hi, I'm Ben Waterworth and welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 6, 2020. Today on the podcast.
In some respects, I think BC was ahead of the curve. I came here from federal politics in the early 2000s and working in and around Alberta. And those places have since become more like BC, which I don't think is a good thing.
We chat with Editor-in-Chief of the Orca, McLean Kay, about his take on the current BC election, finding out a bit more about the Orca, and hearing his unique insight into some BC politicians. McLean Kay is the Editor-in-Chief of The Orca, an independent multimedia publication for BC politics, business and history. Through their content, The Orca focuses on public policy, issues and ideas that affect the BC economy, investment, jobs and long-term prosperity and opportunities for everyday British Columbians. Outside of his role at The Orca, McLean has made a name for himself as a journalist, where he was a feature columnist in the Times Colonist and Calgary Herald, and had his work feature across Canada in the National Post, Globe and Mail, and as a producer with CBC Newsworld. He also served as a speechwriter for former BC Premier Christy Clark for over 5 years. And to talk about everything from The Orca right through to the current BC election, it's a pleasure to welcome McLean to the Capital Daily Podcast right now. McLean, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, a few months ago, we actually got an email here to the Capital Daily, our tips line, very busy line that, of course, is, advising us to check out a questionable media outlet in town with mysterious funding sources, a bit of a right-wing slant. The editor was even a former staffer for Christy Clark. All coincidental things, I believe, today that we've got you on the show, McLean. Here we are. We've found you, of course. But perhaps for our listeners out there who are maybe a little bit unsure of what it is The Orca actually does, maybe you could explain a little bit about what it is that you guys actually do to put people's minds to rest.
Happy to. Yeah, the Orca I founded after, I'd say 2018. You think I'd have the year straight in my head. Just because I was been fascinated by the media scene here in BC and the sort of online alternate media landscape to which the Capital has since joined and enriched. It's always been very big and diverse, but it kind of lacked that kind of center-right voice that sort of, you know, lower mainland, suburban, soccer mom, sort of generally pro-business and generally sort of small, very small C conservative. And to me, that's a voice that needs hearing more often. And it's an interesting voice. And it's just a question of adding another voice to the spectrum. It's not about shouting anyone else down. You mentioned my work history. Yeah, I did work for the past BC Liberal government. I worked for the Liberal government in Ottawa, and then did work for in CBC and the Calgary Herald and in Alberta, and then moved here and got recruited into government, and I've sort of gone back into journalism. So I've kind of done government journalism, if that makes sense.
It does, I think, somewhere in there. I sort of understand that. I mean, through that career and everything you were kind of just mentioning, did you ever have a mindset that this would be something maybe that you would like to do a publication like The Orca to add that extra voice, as you were saying, to a market which perhaps didn't have that voice before?
Honestly, no. it was never a goal or a. I had always worked for other outlets before. I mentioned CBC, the Calgary Herald. I wrote for the Globe and Mail, and I was always happy under an umbrella. But I mean, the reality is, media is shrinking, and so you know, if my previous dream had been to be, you know, Keith Baldry with Global, that's a diminishing, that is a hard job to get these days, and there's fewer of them. So, I mean, the future is in startup media outlets, again, like the Capital, like places like the Tyee. And so, I mean, it was just, as I say, I thought I it was an opportunity, and it's, you know, a couple of years later, here we are.
How has the feedback been for the Orca since it started? I mean, has it been what you were expecting it to be since you started in 2018?
Yeah, very much. It's grown. It's grown sort of steadily, very steadily since day one. It's been a very gradual and a climb in terms of numbers and in terms of clicks, podcast downloads, all that kind of stuff. To me, it was really important that the risk with new media, especially when we write primarily about politics. And one of the things that struck me about BC when I first moved here is how angry the politics are. And I have never liked that. And I'm a big fan of the belief that, you know, reasonable people can disagree, and they frequently do. My own coverage, my own writing, I try very hard to stay respectful. I have to see, back when we were still able to be in the legislature on a day-to-day basis, you know, you have to make eye contact with people you're reporting on. I never want to be embarrassed. I never want to be ashamed. And, you know, these are grown-ups. They can handle constructive criticism, but it's, you know, never personal. And so on that front, I'm incredibly proud of the Orca and sort of the tone. You know, we can have disagreements about policy, but it's never personal. That's why we're all here.
Do you think there's a particular reason why there is that sort of mood and type of, I guess, angst towards politicians and politics in general in BC compared to other parts of the country?
Well, in some respects, and this is depressing, in some respects, I think BC was ahead of the curve. I came here from federal politics in the early 2000s and working in and around Alberta, which is where I'm from. And those places have since become more like BC in that respect, which I don't think is a good thing. Here, why was BC ahead of the curve? I mean, there's probably a million reasons, and we could talk about this for the entire half hour. Part of it was that it's always been very polarized. One is two main parties, and that's, again, slowly changing. But I mean, it's easy to have an us versus them narrative when it's just two sides. Where I grew up in Alberta, which was essentially a one party state at the time, which was not a good thing, but the tone was different. And Ottawa has always been, you know, two main parties, but more of a multi-party system. And so when I first came here, I mean, honestly, I was shocked. I never saw the reason why things were so angry all the time. That's not to suggest that I'm naive or, you know, things can't get angry, but when you're starting off at an 8 and the maximum is 10, there's nowhere else to go.
Switching focus to the current election, would love to know, would you have perhaps called an election if this was your choice? I mean, if there's one thing, I guess, uniting all the opposition parties right now that you're sort of mentioning, the hatred of a snap pandemic election. The polls are showing that the majority of BCers are not liking this as well. But anything could, of course, happen in the next few weeks. John Horgan potentially might get his majority based on everything that's happened so far. So, I mean, if you were in his shoes, McLean, would you have called the election?
I'd like to say no. I understand the temptation. I've been in that office before. Politically, I get it. I understand. They looked at the polls, and I think that they looked at, you know, some of the problems that the province is going to have over the course of the next year. And I'm talking about, you know, the tax deferral cliff for businesses, a lot of which are going to go out of business in the next 6 months, that kind of thing. And I think they concluded that things might not be better a year from now than they are now. And so, absolutely, I understand the temptation to go. And, you know, the polls indicate that that might have been the right call. But a snap election during a pandemic, it's pretty irresponsible, especially since, you know, we had a stable government. We had there was absolutely no indication that there were any problems until after the fact. And, you know, we don't need to be going to the polls. The leaders don't need to be touring the province right now. I mean, it's not possible to argue that it is safer to be campaigning than not campaigning. All the parties are being responsible about it as much as they can. Of course they are. They're all adults. But I would like to think that I would have refused the temptation. But that said, I completely understand the temptation.
How does this election look different in the non-Vancouver Island parts of BC? Because here at the moment, I mean, you're not really seeing any BC Liberal signs around Victoria, but of course they're obviously a strong contender everywhere else. So what are the big issues out there, McLean, that perhaps everyone except us here on the island cares about?
You know what, there's BC's been interesting in that there's a number of sort of different areas that and different regions that all have their own issues. I mean, if you were to ask this question of somebody, you know, picking a part of the province at random. In Metro Vancouver, it might still be housing. In parts, it might also be, you know, homelessness and the overdose epidemic and crime like it is in Victoria. Places like Richmond and Tawasin and Delta, it's transportation and traffic. In northern and rural BC, it's jobs, economic security, making investments so that those parts of the province can even just keep up. You know, other parts, it's forestry. So, I mean, I know it's hard to give a single answer because, I mean, a person's priorities in 100 Mile House and downtown Victoria and, you know, Surrey are completely different from each other. And so it's hard to, you know, speak to all of them at the same time, if that makes sense.
You mentioning before about coming here and the divide and sort of all that anger that sort of you had here when you first moved here. And it's interesting kind of to point out that with the diversity, even through what you were just saying there with the different parts of the province, of course, I mean, we have plenty of pot smoking conservatives that are perhaps living next door to old socialists who then may be not too keen on immigrants and everything along those lines. So, I mean, is there one thing that you could put your finger on maybe that outside of BC that Canadians struggle to understand that makes BC politics so unique from what you've experienced since living here?
That is a great question. And I may not have phrased it exactly that way, but I've been trying to think about that since I moved here. And the answer is, I think it's more complicated than we can get into here. One of the things that I was really interested in when I moved here and also starting the Orca was BC history, because I didn't know much of it. And it's so different from the history of the rest of the country. I mean, it really evolved as its own separate, self-contained political culture in a way that other provinces outside of, you know, Quebec really didn't. And so, I mean, I don't think you can point to any one thing or any one aspect, or, you know, it's not a cultural thing. It's not just that we're on the West Coast. It's that BC has its own unique history and influences that, I mean, I am certainly only just beginning to understand, and I've been reading about it for 10 years now, but I mean, I don't think I can give you a better answer than it's its own place with its own dynamics and historical forces at play.
Has there been any particular things that you've learned about over those 10 years that perhaps have really stood out to you as incredibly fascinating?
Oh, I mean, again, how long do you have? There's so many things about the history of this place that absolutely blow my mind. I have spent more hours in the last couple years reading about, you know, the Fraser Canyon gold rush than I would have ever thought I would in my rest of my life combined. It is this fascinating event that really, you know, I think helped shape the province and country in some ways that we don't really understand. And, little nuggets from history that I, you know, just blow my mind of, you know, Victoria having a black city councillor in, I think, the 1860s is just astonishing to me and encouraging in some ways. And also just the relationship between the First Nations and settlers is totally different here than where I grew up in the prairies, where, I mean, there, it's not that it's settled in terms of fairness, but there are treaties. Here there aren't, or at least weren't. And so, I mean, the relationship between the, you know, Indigenous communities and the rest of the province is totally different here. And I think it's probably the most interesting and important aspect of modern politics that people don't seem to be, I don't want to say they're not interested in it, but they don't appreciate it and don't see it on a day-to-day basis, but they probably should, because there's nothing that's more important right now.
Very fascinating, all those different levels there. Just with this current election, again, the Liberals, I'd love to get your thoughts perhaps now, McLean, on how do you think the Liberals are doing at the moment?
Well, I mean, they're behind. That's I don't think I can go a whole lot deeper than that. Well, that's not true. Here's the optimistic look at what the BC Liberals have done. They've cut the lead in half in 2 weeks. I mean, it was about give or take 20 points all summer. It's about give or take 10 points now. It's a bit of an overgeneralization. And, you know, if you're Andrew Wilkinson and the BC Liberals, you're seeing, you know, people are unhappy about the snap election. I think that's pretty well established. And there are some things that, you know, you could potentially criticize. And there's still something like 13 to 15% undecided. A lot of the polls you see that say, well, the Liberals only going to win like 20 seats, 25 seats. I don't believe that. I think the Liberal floor is actually quite high. It's probably in the realm of 35 to 40 seats just because of where their vote is. I mean, it would take an absolute disaster for the Liberals to lose, you know, some of the seats they have in the interior in the north. That said, everything went against them in 2017. They lost a lot of seats that usually are a toss up. A lot of everything kind of went the NDP's way in 2017. Not that they didn't earn it, but at the time it looked like a high watermark for the NDP. And a lot of things have changed since then, including the pandemic. But I mean, it's not too hard to look at the riding map and see a lot of ridings that, yeah, the polls are what they are. But in this riding, which is crucial, it's a lot closer. It's one thing for the NDP to run up the score, for lack of a better way of putting it, in places like, you know, East Vancouver. But if that doesn't translate into places like Surrey and Courtney and Maple Ridge, then you know, the election could be a lot closer than people think.
And how about the Greens? Sonia First now, of course, still very fresh-faced in that role. Do you think that will impact their vote and chances at all during the election?
I don't think her... No, is the short answer. I think she's done an incredible job in just 3 weeks. I mean, the election was called on literally 7 days into her having the job. That's amazing to me. And for them to be able to, I think they like 70 something candidates out of 87 they had lined up in a week. That's astonishing. And so, I mean, she deserves respect for that. It'll be really interesting to see how she does in the debates, because obviously, you know, more than Andrew Wilkinson, she can claim to be wronged. She met with John Horgan the Friday before he called the election, and, you know, there was no indication that was going to happen. And there was a signed agreement in that in fact, he would not do that. And so if she can, you know, continue to look wronged and you know, betrayed, even, not to use too strong a word, I think she'll be very sympathetic. That said, the Greens have a really tough uphill climb. I mean, they have two seats. Neither of them would be considered safe. There aren't a lot of other ridings outside of maybe 10 if you squint, where they're going to be, you know, even competitive. And so, I mean, I talked about the BC Liberals having a high floor. The Greens have a very low ceiling.
I'd love to throw a thesis at you now, McLean. Let's try this out. John Horgan basically governed like a particularly progressive BC Liberal, and that's why he's avoided the kind of flagging support NDPs are getting everywhere else in the country. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a very reasonable thesis. I think that the NDP, like at other big parties, is a coalition, and I don't think that any reasonable person would look at John Horgan and say that he's, you know, a radical. There have been things they've done well. I mean, I worked for a BC Liberal government, and they worked very hard to try and get LNG investment. John Horgan did. You can argue with things like Site C, but you know, he's pursuing it. So like, they have done things that the average BC Liberal voter would be unhappy about. But they've also, the NDP have tried very hard not to become not to live down to the stereotype, if you like, of being, you know, bomb-throwing radicals, which they certainly have not been.
Always good to avoid those stereotypes, I think.
Indeed.
Probably
yeah.
A slight positive there. I mean, is it possible to make a prediction of how this election will turn out, McLean? Is that something you're able to make a prediction about today?
The only prediction I'd be willing to make right now today is that I think it will be closer than people think. There's still so much time left. We haven't even had the debates yet. I really do think the debates will move a lot of public opinion, if only because that'll be the only point of contact in a pandemic election that so many voters will have with the parties at all. Your average voter is not paying attention to Andrew Wilkinson or John Horgan's, you know, Sunday tour stop in Courtney. They're just not. But they are more likely to watch the debates. So I think that'll move some. We have no idea how that'll go. We talked before about, you know, regional support and how I think that'll change, how it'll determine the election. This election will be won and lost in Surrey, to be quite honest with you. And so if the NDP sweeps Surrey, they're going to win a crushing majority. If they do poorly in Surrey, it's going to be a lot more close than I think most people think. That said, I mean, if you're looking for a seat count for me right now, I can't give it to you. We're still only halfway through the campaign.
I'm intrigued to know a little bit more about your time as a speechwriter, McLean, because, I mean, this seems like there could be some fun to be had with this. You know, perhaps maybe somebody dares you to throw in an obscure word to get the premier to say, or maybe even if you've had a rough day with her, you're not too happy, perhaps you throw in some extra long and hard to pronounce words to really throw her off. I mean, do you have little moments like that where maybe you just played around slightly with your skills and speechwriting abilities?
I mean, to an extent, yes. The person I mostly worked for was not Ron Burgundy in that, you know, it wasn't, she was not, if I wrote something she didn't want to say, she was never, ever going to be in a position where she would accidentally say it on live TV. That would never happen in a million years. And so, I mean, there was no opportunities for that. That said, she did encourage me, you know, to go out there and try different stuff and, you know, throw stuff against the wall. If it doesn't stick, that's fine. She'll either like it or not. And she didn't like more stuff than she did. And I don't think that's bad. It's kind of like in baseball. If you're a 300 hitter, you're doing well. I mentioned BC history. She loved nuggets from BC history. And so I spent hours and hours and hours in the beautiful legislative library, which I encourage all your listeners to see. It's a gem. Just finding little blurbs and factoids and, you know, region specific stories that were great for, you know, opening up some of her longer speeches. And they were just fun. And so, yeah, I mean, in terms of like playing pranks on that on her, I don't think that if I worked for years, I could have slipped one past her. It doesn't work like that.
There's something fun too, I can imagine, about going into a library rather than just going on Google and searching for things like that. There's something, smelling the books, picking them up, reading, and actually going and doing some work. It's a bit too easy on Google now.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, when I, I can't remember the year. I want to say whatever year the Vancouver Millionaires had the 100-year anniversary of them winning the Stanley Cup. She wanted some little anecdotes about that. So I went into the library and actually got the newspapers, the actual hard copy, and was looking at the ads for that night's game.
Wow.
You know, 10 cents will get you in to watch the Stanley Cup game against, I can't even remember who, Seattle. And I mean, yeah, I mean, you get a different sense. Did that materially affect her speech? No, of course not. But I enjoyed the process more.
And that's all that matters. Come on now, at the end of the day, that's what matters. Now, I mean, as a journalist and political insider, McLean, it's inevitable that, of course, you're also going to learn some bizarre personal details about politicians, people who govern us that maybe never see the light of day. Now, I don't want you to name names. I mean, you can if you want to, but of course, I don't want to get you into trouble. Have there been any weirder personal tics that you've encountered over the years? I mean, I'll even chime in here and give you one, just, you know, play I share, you share. There's a senior Western Canadian politician who, completely against type, is actually a hardcore Gilbert and Sullivan junkie. So there's one. That's for you to know. Is there anything that you can share with us to share with our listeners?
Well, there's plenty to know, and I'm trying to think of ones that I can share. It's you know, there's ones that I think are well known that people don't know. I mean, if you've heard of John Martin, he's an MLA from Chilliwack. He's actually a literal world champion barbecuer.
Wow.
I don't know what the verb. And I only know that because, you know, he used to barbecue and it's unspeakably good. John Horgan, to show you I mean, that was a BC Liberal MLA, the current premier, John Horgan. Less known about him is, one thing that we have in common is we're both fossil nerds.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He was up in Courtney this weekend, looking at a new, plesiosaur, which has just been discovered at the Trent River there, at the museum. I told him about that.
Great. Wow.
True story.
I feel like there's like a big, massive get together. You can go when the new Jurassic World movie comes out next year, then perhaps you can all head out and watch it.
Well, we should, I think. I mean, Chris Pratt's going to love it, first of all. But second of all, I mean, it's, I mean, you wanted to know an interesting little quirk, and it's one of those things that only came up. He was up in the press gallery for a Christmas event and was looking around where we work, and I have, you know, trilobites. Google it if you're and he asked where I got it, and we started talking about fossils, and you know, we ended up talking for 20 minutes about prehistoric life.
Fantastic.
I mean, these are real people, they have real interests, and you know, the overwhelming majority, forget the party, are actually really good people. I'm a firm believer that most people get into politics for the right reason. I've seen very few examples to the contrary in my life across all parties, and you know, I get along with almost all of them without exception. Is there, you know, again, I started by saying people have reasonable people can disagree. The thing that always drove me nuts about politics in BC is you'd hear things like, well, these guys want to ruin, they don't care about this. They only want to ruin whatever. That's not true. It's never been true. They may have different ideas how to get there, but everyone wants the same thing, which is to make things better. They could be wrong, but how to do it. But I mean, for the most part, we're talking about good people.
Well, at the end of the day, as long as they can do a good world championship style barbecue and enjoy fossils and perhaps Jurassic Park movies, then that's all that some people might care about. I perhaps am that person, McLean, but I unfortunately can't vote yet. So, you know, my voice doesn't really matter at the moment. if people want to see more of what McLean and the crew at the Orca do, of course, you can head to theorca.ca to check out all the content there. McLean, it's been a pleasure and a lot of fun to chat with you today on the Capital Daily Podcast. Thanks very much for your time.
Pleasure's all mine. Thanks very much.
Coming up, all the day's news. Plus, do you think you're eating bread every time you have a Subway sandwich? Well, find out why you might not be next. Wondering what to have for dinner? How about Rock Bay Market's newest ready-to-cook taco kit featuring smoked octopus marinated in a Jamaican-inspired jerk barbecue sauce? Find everything you need to quickly and easily prepare 8 delicious tacos with the best locally sourced wild and seasonal ingredients. This delicious kit is dropping today, with a limited number of kits remaining for pickup or delivery. Simply head to rockbaymarket.ca to make your order. To the day's news now, and about $85,000 has been spent by the City of Victoria in the cleanup of the former homeless camp on Pandora Avenue, city staff told CTV News and Check. The costs include general cleanup, grass restoration, tree rehabilitation, irrigation work, and fencing installation. Work on the site has lasted months after the camp was forcibly dismantled by the province in May, with fencing still in place in front of Our Place Society as of this weekend. The Pandora eviction prompted the establishment of spin-off tent encampments at Topaz Park, Beacon Hill Park and Centennial Square, among others, along with the province-led conversion of several Victoria hotels into permanent low-barrier shelters. Testing is currently underway to confirm whether a fast-acting deer disease, which can kill cervids within 3 to 5 days, is a cause of the death of more than 60 deer on at least 2 Gulf Islands. In a statement by the provincial government, if confirmed, it would be the first documented adenohemorrhagic disease outbreak in BC. There is no known human health risk from the virus, nor evidence that it can be transmitted to humans, to livestock, or to pets. However, Gulf Island hunters are still warned not to eat from animals found already dead, obviously ill, or acting abnormally. AHD damages the small blood vessels in a deer's lungs and intestines, causing labored breathing, foaming or drooling from the mouth, as well as seizures, diarrhea, and ulcers. AHD was first identified in black-tailed deer in California in 1994, and there are current outbreaks in both California and Oregon. The Oak Bay Council has banned the municipal use of rat poison that is only available to licensed commercial pest control companies. The ruling does not affect the availability or use of other rat poisons, such as those that can be bought from retail sources. According to the Oak Bay News, the ruling comes after a rise in the awareness of secondary poisoning through bioaccumulation, which killed several owls. And Sydney is set to get its first cannabis shop after the town's council reversed course due to overwhelmingly positive feedback from residents. The council has referred the shop to the Liquor and Cannabis Regulation Branch, which grants cannabis retail licenses in the province. The council is also expected to mull whether to open up Beacon Avenue to more cannabis retail locations. Sydney should anticipate continued interest from businesses to open retail cannabis stores on the town's premier commercial street, a report from Sydney's manager for long-term planning said. And before we go today, some sad news for lovers of Subway sandwiches, with an Irish court ruling that Subway sandwich bread is not really bread. According to the Toronto Sun, Ireland's Supreme Court ruled the subs are too sugary to meet the legal definition of bread. Now, the ruling found that the fast food chain's sub sugar to flour content is roughly 5 times too high to qualify as bread. The Sun added that for a company to be taxed 0% under Ireland's Value Added Tax Act of 1972, an act that, let's be honest, we're all familiar with, the weight of sugar and fat in a bread product must not be more than 2% of the total weight of flour in the dough. The dough baked for Subway sandwiches, however, has a sugar content of roughly 10% the weight of its flour content. The Subway franchise owner in the middle of the dispute argued that the restaurant was not required to meet the standard on to-go items such as sandwiches, an argument the court rejected. Nutritional facts posted by Subway say that a 6-inch white bread roll has 5 grams of sugar, which is similar to an Oreo cookie. Now, I actually haven't eaten bread in a very long time, but I have to say I did used to love the bread at Subway and often just wanted to order a blank sandwich just to eat the bread, and apparently now I can see why. Perhaps next time, though, it would be better if maybe you ordered your Subway sandwich with an Oreo cookie instead of the bread. It's basically going to be the same thing, right? And that's it today for the Capital Daily podcast for Tuesday, October 6, 2020. Join us tomorrow as we chat with Capital Daily reporter Anna J. James about her continued coverage of the tent situation in Beacon Hill Park and her recent story related to that. You won't want to miss it. My name is Ben Waterworth, and as they say in Australia, crikey, ripper, g'day, too right, mate, still be apples. I just felt like today was a bit of a greatest hits day. Thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you tomorrow. Today's edition of the Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by Rock Bay Market and their new locally sourced smoked Pacific octopus taco kits. If that makes your mouth water, head to rockbaymarket.ca to find out more. Introducing the Capital Daily's weekly photo challenge. Each week, our team will post a weekly photo theme in Monday's Capital Daily newsletter, as well as announcing it right here on the podcast, with winners receiving gift cards to local Victoria businesses around town. This week's theme, what are you thankful for? To enter, simply email us your photo or post it directly to your own social media account. For more details, check out Monday's Capital Daily newsletter.